right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are all right. Today, it's a bit of a double header. First off, I had a conversation with Kyle Dale from the Oasis Collectors Group. And yeah, it was always good to catch up with Kyle. He's always got so much stuff going on. That group is absolutely nuts. Yeah, he's done a bunch of signings with ex-Oasis and Noel Gallagher band members, and he's been out to the various gigs, so it's good to catch up on those. Plus also a bit of an update on that whole Liam signature situation that I touched upon last episode. So yeah, always good to catch up with Kyle. And then also I spoke to Fergal Kinney. He is a journalist, a freelance writer. He's done some really interesting stuff over the years. And yeah, he reached out to me a little while back because he's doing a piece for GQ on Oasis, on Oasis split and potential reunion. And yeah, so we got chatting and I got him on the podcast as well. And the timing has actually worked really well because the next track on the Oasis A to Z is Half the World Away. And we've also just had the 25th anniversary of the first ever episode of the Royal Family TV show, of which the Half the World Away was very famously the opening theme. And the reason that ties in is he's recently written an article about the Royal Family for that 25th anniversary. So yeah, that was a really good article. I'll link it below. And yeah, so it was really good to catch up with Fergal, talk about Half the World Away, the Royal Family TV show, Caroline Ahern, more broadly as well, because she's a hero of mine, a brilliant, brilliant comedian. So yeah, good chat. Hope you guys enjoy it. Nothing crazy has happened in the world of news. I suppose I'm recording this on the Sunday after the Russell Brand documentaries just aired. Apparently Russell Brand, well, we always thought he was a bit of a wrong'un, but he seems to have been even worse than we thought. Some implications there, because obviously he's like best mates with Matt Morgan, and then also has been good mates over the years with Noel Gallagher. And I see a few people in the Oasis Reddit and places like that sort of then questioning about Noel. You know, would he have known much about Russell's situation? I mean, ultimately, you know, he did. He was hanging out with him on the radio and stuff, but, you know, I don't think he was actively involved in any of the filthy stuff he was into. So yeah, but we'll wait and see what happens, whether Matt Morgan talks about it on any upcoming episodes of his podcast, or whether Noel comments on it. Probably not, to be fair. They tend to just don't talk about it when things go horribly wrong for someone in their circle. That tends to be silence and hope it goes away tends to be the best option. But we'll see.
This is no place for false modesty. When an inquiry like that is made, it's best to own it, although a great many of my free chord licks have yet to make it in the top 10.
No, he's good at long words, except he's a loser in the game of life. Unlike
long
me,
words.
I've mastered the swear words, but I'm winning.
Long words, short songs. There's probably
long
more
career,
money
than that. Short career.
Well, I mean, I'm still going. The jury's still out.
But anyway, nothing else particularly exciting. Liam's been a bit more active on Twitter. It sounds like he should be announcing a definitely maybe 30th anniversary gigs soon, apparently. And he's apparently been in the studio doing some recording, which is good. All right, but that'll do it. Let's cross over now to Kyle.
We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back to the Oasis podcast. Our good friend and leader of the OCG, Carl Dell. How you doing, man?
I'm not too bad, mate. How you doing? You okay?
Yeah, very good. Very good. You're staying cool, surrounded by packages and all kinds of stuff in up there.
It's a mad one. Yeah, I did a signing with Zach Starkey about 4 weeks ago now, and I usually have everything done within a week or two afterwards, back to all the buyers. But unfortunately, a bit of bad news in the family. I got ill and blah blah blah. It's just been a bit of a month. But yeah, I'm sat surrounded by probably about 50 packages right now. There's about another 30 downstairs, and then Zach's done, and I move on to the High Flying Birds one I did last weekend, which was another big one. But yeah, busy. That's what I quit the job for, to try and do this full time.
Amazing. Well, let's talk about that. I mean, how was it meeting Zach? Was that was around my way, wasn't it? Berkshire way?
Down just below Reading, I think it was, yeah. I mean, how was it? So, we were supposed to be meeting in Edinburgh or wherever the next gig was, near Newcastle. But there was a miscommunication, so that one didn't happen. And then he was like, oh, it's okay, it's cool. Come down to the gig at Eden Project in Cornwall. I said, yeah, that's a similar drive, yeah. 12 and a half hours or something like that. I thought, fantastic. So how was it? It was great, because I drove to Cornwall from Edinburgh and then had a gig 4 hours back to the signing session the next day, and then about 48 hours drive home. But very worth it. He was one of the coolest guys I've ever met, although he's also one of the slowest signers I've ever met. A two-hour job took 7 hours. So, fun and games. But it was well worth it. And it gave me what I wanted, a relationship with Teenage Cancer Trust. So it's worked out well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just to be in the presence of the guy. I mean, it's when you're sat there for like 7 hours as he's signing, you sort of making conversation for 7 hours, or do you want to bother him? You know what I mean? Like, oh, what was he like with Ringo being your dad?
Yeah, it's funny because people request various things on, you know, dedications on drum skins and whatever it may be, which is great. And everyone will always say to so and so. When people request, can you put this quote that your dad used to say? He was like, why the fuck would I do that? No, definitely not. I'm my own man. I thought that's pretty cool. He's got his own, Power to the People on the drum skin is the only one he did, really, over and over again. Oh, Rock Off he did quite a few times. But it was great. I mean, the stories this guy's got, and even his missus is also obviously in a band, and they were just really welcoming, really friendly, and exactly as you'd expect them to be, you know. So, it was great. It was absolutely great. And I think, like I say, it was he donated 100%. Of the proceeds that Teenage Cancer Trust, as did I for this one, so they'll get a good few grand out of a long trip, which is always a bonus.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so what's the deal then? Obviously, Teenage Cancer Trust have been, one of the big ones that Oasis and the guys have supported over the years. So what's the plan then? All this Zach stuff is effectively going to them.
Yeah, only for this one, because that was effectively, which is great to hear, I'll only do this if it goes to TCT. I was like, well, I'm buzzing about that. As a twice survivor myself, that's brilliant. And I just had in my to-do list for this year, I wanted to do something for TCT. So this was like a nice introduction in there. And I've got a new website launching in October, bittersweethome.co.uk. And as we launch that, obviously, for me, I want as many people on the mailing list as possible so that they can go in the web store and have a look around at events and signing sessions and whatnot. So any traffic going to the website is a bonus for me. So I'm putting on four charity auctions for big ticket items. Paul Weller's donated a multi-platinum Oasis disc that he got given by Noel. I've got a Noel vinyl signed by the Noel latest album signed by Noel. There's a Noel signed print, and then there's an Oasis shirt given by Gillette, which was given to him when they played Manchester, and all the Oasis should be signed that as we speak. So all the proceeds for that is going to TCT, and the bonus for me is, you know, promotion that money can't buy, really. So it's good.
Fantastic. Well, that's brilliant. And that should raise thousands for an absolutely amazing cause. So what a mate, that's awesome.
I'm hoping for 15 grand. That's what I'm hoping for, a minimum of 10, which is, right now, she was saying to me, Jane at TCT, they're really struggling right now. But the time has been hard for most people. Donations have gone down. So as best we can, we'll be quite good. But yeah, I would hope even the Weller disc on its own should clear. I would hope a good few grand.
Yeah.
And we've got Zach's money already as well. So we're in a good spot. I think it'll be at least 10.
That is awesome. That's fantastic. One other thing I wanted to talk to you about, and I mentioned it last episode, this whole situation with these Liam signatures, right? So I mean,
oh,
I know,
the
Banquet Records thing. I mean, I don't know what the latest is, but what I just want to ask you more about is more generally when you're looking at kind of signatures. Obviously, like Liam, Noel, like they have got no one ever signs anything exactly the same way twice, right? Because you know, you think these things. I imagine you sat there, they're scribbling away, next, scribble away. Often they're doing things sort of hanging over a barrier. So it's really hard, this, isn't it?
Well, yes and no, because Noel just did it for 1,000 records for his latest album, and they're all pretty much exactly the same. You know, they're not done over a fence, are they? They're done sat down at a table, probably at the house. Are they real? Are they not? I mean, there's no 100% way of saying either or, but I think when you look at the two of them side by side, there was a previous history with BDIB prints that came out, and then MTV prints as well, and then Come On You Know. And now this, it just seems to be, if you look at the two of them side by side, they're very different. No one will ever know for sure, but they're very different. Okay. All the Liam ones are done very, the genuine ones, or so we think, are done quite quickly and in a certain way. I just don't think it would change the way you write certain letters. But, you know, it's not, there's no campaign for myself, you know. I think there seems to be a lot of people that are unhappy. Mm. I was quite lucky that the ones I got were what we think was the real deal. But, the never-ending fun carries on, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I jump into the group occasionally, and like we were saying, I'm not really a big Facebook person, but I keep an eye on the group. And, it's sort of, obviously a lot of people have been unhappy about it and going back to Banquet. And to be fair, I think Banquet are kind of refunding people, aren't they? So it's not like,
it's a case of, it's not Banquet's fault, really. You know, if there is something that's happened, as if they have been sent prints that are not genuine, it's not their fault, it's the artist's fault. You know, it's like with the Rita Ora thing. There's a lot of stuff goes on in the world these days, though, with auto pens and secretarial signatures. Elton John's just done a signed release, and it's auto pen, so it looks the real part, but everyone's exactly the same, done by an auto pen machine. It depends how you kind of look at what you want. You know, do you want it to be just a print of the signature, or do you want the original from the artist? I think if you're paying for a signed item, you should get a hand-signed item by the person.
Yeah.
But, it's a sticky one, because these are very, very close to later ones, so something might be okay. You can never tell for sure, but there's a few kind of genuine signature experts online, and then you've got your Beckett and your JSAs over in America. They've all declined these other ones as likely not genuine, and they're obviously an industry specialist in signatures. So it's a hard one to put a pin in, isn't it? It really is. It's a shame. It's a shame. You want to get something and be happy with it straight away, don't you?
Yeah, it's so difficult, because you think if you're buying something off eBay and it's, you know, and then it's like, well, that's up to you. You know, you take your risk. And but yeah, you think you're getting it from the source. Well, if you get it from the source, whether it's such a funny one. But anyway, but yes.
I mean, it's been happening for a long time with a lot of fans. And it's usually the label pulling a fast one to get more sales last minute. You know, but it's I don't know, when it's one of your favourites, you kind of think, oh, come on. But we'll see how it pans out. I think it's hit the tabloids, hasn't it? I'm sure someone said yesterday they saw it in the Daily Mail or the Mirror or something. But for me, if you look at them side by side, one of the lads over in America put a full, like 10 of the genuine, 10 of the proposed not genuine, and they are totally different. You know, even the speed of how they're done is unusual. But you know, no one's an expert. Let's see how it comes out.
Fair enough. And you've had a busy old time as well as these signatures. You've been out and about. So what, you saw Liam at Coco and Noel at Withenshaw. He had a busy couple of weeks.
No, it's been a very, it's an awkward one, because I promised her I would stay in a little bit this month. I totally forgot about those two gigs. but I was actually supposed to be down for Taunton as well. But in the end, I cancelled that one, just went down for London twice. So yeah, Liam at Coco was, I mean, I was at Liam in Blackburn for the special launch, and that, to me, so far, was my favourite Liam gig, the Blackburn one. I think Coco might have taken it. It was really rough, but I quite liked that, if you know what I mean. It was very rough, but there was a few girls at the front that were getting a bit bounced around, so it got a bit extreme at times, but he was on form. lads from the LCG that all met up and had a beer before and afterwards. Yeah, it was good. Did you not? Why didn't you go?
I've got things to do, people to see, mate. No, I
you don't need a family, you don't need a job.
No, I know. It's one of those where it's always the case for me. I'd see these things get announced. It's like, oh, I'll have to remember to apply for that, and then I just don't do it. And so, I missed it. It would have been a good one, though. Well, then the other one, so what you're saying about that, that's so great that like the OCG does these sort of meetups when you go to places, because. So I saw you did one there, but then also I forgot to mention this. You were at the Noel Kingston
conversation, with Belton as well.
So that's another one you've done this month.
Yeah, she was really angry this month. I've seen her angry in the past, but she's really angry this month. So I was down for that, and it was really, really good, really good. There's no recording of it, but there's cameras everywhere, so I suspect it'll come out shortly, as we're within shore. But I think you've got we had about. God, I get about 28 at that. But it's good because you get a lot of people that come down on their own, knowing that if you go to the pub that we put up, they're going to be with 30 friends within minutes. And that's what happened. Yeah, we went to the Ram, which is next to the venue. As I walked in, I just saw like 12 lads sat in the corner. And they were telling me that they were all sat 5 minutes before in separate spots, one there, two there, one there, two there. And one of them came in very drunk and just shouted OCG at the top of his voice. Sean from Dundee, I'll name check him. And then they realised that they were all there for this meeting. So it was great. We ended up having, I met a lot of people that I've been speaking to for 8 years. So it's been really good, yeah. And the event itself, unlike the Liam debacle, was perfect with Banquet. They did a really good job at it. And if anything, it was just a bit too short. It kind of flew by. It's good.
Yeah, that's. I like that. That's like someone blowing the horn, isn't it? Someone just walks in, OCG!
That's exactly what I did. That's exactly what I did. I'd been drinking on the train on the way down, as you'd expect. Yeah, he just came in and shouted out at the top of his voice like a foghorn and came running. It was funny.
That's fantastic.
It's great meeting people, even if you briefly say hello to them for 5 minutes. It's great, you know. And people recognise you off Instagram, but they've got their other accounts that I've been looking at. So it's good to put faces to names and stuff. It's an idea. But it happens at every event now. Same happened in Manchester for Noel at Wivenshaw. That was belting, that gig. Really good. Best I've ever seen Noel.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I'd say so. And the band, I'd just done a signing session with three of the band members that morning. So we was all a bit tired. But as a unit, as a musical unit, they are so tight, it's unbelievable. They're so perfectly, when you look at them as a unit, they're just fantastic. I was saying to Jess afterwards, you guys are seriously there, you know what I mean? They've got a proper, to use the phrase, a proper wall of sound. It's great.
Yeah. And talking about Jess as well, it was something we picked up on, I don't know if it was recorded now or when I was chatting to someone else. Jess it seems to be such an important part of the band now. She's almost like, she's doing so many of the backing vocals, and she's a really important element.
She's great, and she's also one of the friendliest people I've ever met in the music industry. She really is. She'll, two of the big prints that are going for the charity draw for this website, the artist, it was Jess that went and got them signed for the artist in Bournemouth, and he's then donated them for this charity draw. So she'll go over and above for the fans, and she's great, yeah. I think I've worked with most of the band members now, and you couldn't say a wrong thing about anybody. Everyone's just proper friendly and down to earth. So it's great to go see them and see them playing so well. This new album's just unbelievable. I can't turn it off.
You've been enjoying it, yeah?
Yeah, I think it's great. I really do. I think there's not a song that I look at and think, I'm going to skip this one. Mm-hmm. So that's what made the gig so good in Manchester, because they're all on top form as a unit. They've got a nice back catalogue now to go back into. The new album's top notch. Other than the fact that, it rained for most of the day, so it was a mud pit. It was one of the best gigs I've ever been to.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And what about Liam Nebworth's album? Have you given that much of a listen?
I have, yeah. I must admit, this last month and a half, I'm that busy with things. I've not really had time to spin any vinyl, but I've popped it on the digital stuff, something else than that. It's good. I think it's a good live album, isn't it? I think it sounds live, stupid thing to say, but it sounds live, if that makes sense. A lot of live albums come out and you can't really hear the crowd or the racket, or I think they've done a good job with this one. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's been well produced. I talked about it last episode. I had a couple of issues with it, but I've listened to it a few more times, and, it is, I agree. It's sort of it's what you want. It's it captures the feeling of the gig, whether you were there or not. And it's you know, Liam's band are, you know, they're not, they are what they are. They're going to represent like those songs in the best way possible in a, you know, and do a really good job. It's not, they're not gonna go off and do something amazing.
Live, sorry to put in there, when you see Liam live, I think the band are good, but once Bono walks on the stage, it all changes. Everything changes. I don't know how he does it, but it's just when his fingers hit the strings, it sounds different to other guitarists. So, yeah, it's good, and especially when Bono's on, is the best way to put it. They're a good band, they're a great band, but when Bono comes on, it just changes the kind of feeling of the place, you know what I mean? It's, you're back in the 90s again with MC1.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right, mate. What else is going on? What else? Is there anything that we need to catch up on?
Well, the Rockfield studio events that I do a few times a year. We did have one penciled in for October, but we're looking at it now. And I think because I'm launching this website mid-October, we're going to put it back to January and just give me a month to kind of focus on this. So I don't know who the guest was going to be at this one. I was hoping for Jill Febinowski, actually.
Oh, wow.
I talked to her about the last one, but diaries didn't work. So I'm hoping this time I can get her to come along. But yeah, we're thinking January or February for that. The big thing now is the website launch. You know, I've gone and bought 15 grand's worth of stock to put on there from my usual solid sources, plus all signing sessions and events will go on there. It'll be a good website to have on the mailing list. But it's, I'm just tired from that and all the packing right now. But it's better than working in finance and running around speaking to people like you all day. Nightmare. I'd rather speak to you on this side of the fence than that side of the fence. So,
yeah, no, absolutely.
How have we not talked about this yet? I've just got this 1993 demo tape. Did you see that?
Yes, right. Let's take that a sec.
We've got to talk about that. Yeah, so that's something that for years I've wanted the Swirl demo tape. You know, there was 10 made and they're very rare and you go for, 7 to 10 grand or so, but I've always wanted one of those. And then I learned about these tapes. So pre-Noel, they obviously recorded a tape each. I think there's 3 or 4 max with Alice tape being reminisced on. I mean, they're all on YouTube anyway, and they have been for a while, but I wanted the physical article. Where do you get one from? No idea. And just by chance, I met a chap called Liam Dennehy recently.
Yeah.
And he was, he's mentioned in Paul Gallagher's book, where he tells a story about this exact tape, and they were rehearsing in a social club, an Irish social club in Leven June, from memory, and they got kicked out for a few weeks for smoking weed, but Liam gave him this tape, and he's kept it since then, so it's ridiculously old. It's framed, it's in a nice frame, but it makes no sense. You know, the logo's the wrong era, this picture's the wrong era, but it's a very, very nice item, so I'm over the moon to get hold of that. I think it might be the earliest piece of Oasis memorabilia, you know, the earliest dated piece.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So, a big purchase and a big item. I'm going to get it digitized in the next couple of weeks and make sure it's got the same stuff on it as what's on YouTube, because imagine if there was something else on there, but I don't think there will be.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Imagine like if this runs for 5 minutes, then you get a bit extra at the end. That would be
anything really, because they're all, I suspect they've done one master and copied that, though, like you would have done back in them days, but it's just a nice thing to have. I was looking at doing some exhibitions with Red House early next year across the UK, kind of the history of the band told via items and images. So starting off with, you know, probably this tape, not to be honest with you, moving through the Swirl and all the items and iconic images that go with it, with a coffee book edition side with there as well. So we'll talk about that, because I think it'll be a good separate podcast if it goes ahead. But this will be the start off of that exhibition if we go ahead with it.
She always comes up smiling and playing with her hair. She sometimes says says I'm lying. She thinks that I don't care. I know that if I see you, I have to look and smile. I know that if I hear you, I think I'll run a mile.
That'd be amazing, mate. Yeah, well, I interviewed Liam Dennehy back. Oh, very early days of the podcast, 2017 or something. Cause,
Oh, did you?
And he, so I talked to him about it back then. And I think because he was working in a memorabilia shop, wasn't he? I think, I don't know if he still does work in a memorabilia shop now.
Framers, I think it is, yeah. He
right.
Does frames, frame. Oh, I know he does framers. I don't know if it's actually a memorabilia shop. It probably is.
Yeah, there you go. But no, he seemed like a top man, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to go down and do a video interview with him in the next couple of weeks and just, you know, have it accompany this tape, if that makes sense. You know, tell the story of... Because he told me the story in person. And it's the one paragraph in the book is great, but hearing the detail and hearing what they did and what they got up to, it's gold dust. And he was like, well, it's just a memory. I said, yeah, but people want to hear this stuff.
Yeah.
So I thought I'll go and get him on video and talk about it. And then that's the perfect kind of COA for the item for the future as well.
Yeah.
But no, it's it wasn't cheap and it was hard to find. But, you know, again, the missus is livid. But these things come up and you just got to snap your fingers and get them, you know.
Absolutely.
It's good, yeah. No, it's... I'll look it up. It's going to be an exciting couple of months, and hopefully we'll be up and running and raise a lot of money for charity at the same time.
All right, brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Carl. And once again, I suppose the people can find you on the OCG on Facebook, but then as the or this new website.
Yeah, OCG on Facebook. There was an Oasis Collectors group, but it got shut down randomly. So OCG. But yeah, the main focus is going to be bittersweethome.co.uk post mid-October. So have a glance, jump on the mailing list, because that'll be the best way to get notified about events and stuff like that. But yeah, all good. Always all a pleasure right. to catch up.
Yeah, all the best, mate. Speak to you soon.
Take care, buddy. Nice one. Cheers.
Great stuff. Thank you, Kyle. Always good to catch up with him. And yes, make sure if you check out the OCG on Facebook or if Bittersweet website is up, obviously go and get involved in that. Always interesting stuff going on there, whether it's events or signings or definitely worth checking out. Right, now we're going to cross over now to my interview with Fergal. I'll link through the articles that we talk about in the notes below, so do go and check those out. But yeah, really good to catch up with Fergal, and I hope you guys enjoy it. If you aren't a fan of the royal family, if it's not something that you've seen before, maybe you're a bit younger or not from the UK, what a show. Go and check it out, because it's an amazing show that's sort of right up there with some of the best TV that this country's ever produced. And Half the World Away isn't too bad a song either, is it? So we talk about that as well. All right, here is me and Fergal.
I would like to leave this city. This old town don't smell too pretty. And I can feel the warning signs running around my mind. And when I leave this island, I book myself into a soul asylum. 'Cause I can feel the warning signs running around my mind.
All right, so welcome to the Oasis podcast. Fergal Kinney, how you doing, man?
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much for having me on. Long time listener, first time caller. So, yeah, thanks.
That's a classic line. Isn't it? I don't know where that came. Was that The Simpsons? I don't know.
I've absolutely no idea on the roots of that. That's another article I can research there.
So, yeah, as you said, you're a freelance like writer, researcher, for GQ, Guardian, all the coolest publications.
Yeah. New Statesman. I know you had George Eaton, who is one of the senior editors there, on the podcast. And yeah, right, from New Statesman quite a lot, Tribune. But yeah, Guardian, one of the main ones.
Fair enough. Cool. And how did you get into that? It sounds like a Manchester-ish accent. Did you grow up around there?
Was relevant for this chat, I suppose. I was born just outside of Blackburn, and so I was born in 1993. Just outside of Blackburn. But I've kind of orbited Manchester my entire life, and hence an interest in a lot of that culture. So I went to university in Manchester. I had a weird route into journalism where I studied politics and in Manchester, and over the course of doing that course, I just became far less interested in that and found that I was like hyper motivated to do stuff around music. So always blagging to get into things for free. So then if you want to get into stuff for free, you find you have to write about it. And I started finding I was okay at doing that. And so it kind of progressed from there. And then I think about 5 years ago, like anything, you just naturally get a bit better. And in my mid-20s, I just started getting bigger, better commissions. I think I had a clearer sense of what I was looking at, which seemed to be coming back to like the politics degree thing, that seemed to come back into it. So I found that I was right about culture, but from a point of view of what it might reveal about a certain moment in time, which is where I think some of the conversations you've had on this podcast are quite good in that, because I think with Oasis, there is an enormous amount to go off. And that, you know, that only becomes more clear actually about what complicated things they might have said about Britain in the 1990s.
Yeah, you can't get away from that. You know, it's sort of, obviously you kind of find a lot of things now, especially online, is like, oh, bloody politics, don't talk about politics or whatever. But, you know, I mean, music is always going to be tied to politics. You can't, like, if music isn't tied to politics, then that in itself is political, you know what I mean? And so, yeah. And Oasis were always political, in whether it be actively saying about, you know, supporting Labour or like, you know, or just in the fact that they were working class lads making a racket, you know, that is political in itself. So you can't, we're not going to sit there and discuss, you know, the by-election results, although I did that with Hannah Fearn, to be fair. But, you know, but then, yeah, you know, obviously it's always political. But yeah, I think that's always what I always find fascinating with it. And even going back and doing the sort of the other podcast I do, Britpop History, when you really go into minutiae of, okay, what was happening each month? You know, I'm into like August 1993. And it's like, yeah, actually looking into kind of, you know, it's so bizarre. You look at August 1993, 30 years ago, and there's a failing Tory government covered in sleaze and mistakes and errors being torn apart. It's so different to now, isn't it?
Yeah, or August 1993, I might have to listen to those episodes, because that would have been the weeks and months that I was a little baby just arrived on Earth as well. So that's, I know quite a bit about the John Major back to basics sleaze stuff. And yeah, it does, I think maybe a reason why some of that 90s culture is becoming a little bit more compelling right now is because you can see the parallels. I was thinking recently about there's a link made between when some might say it was released and was on top of the pops, and the Conservatives have just been sort of out of thrashing in the local elections, and you do have a sense of, oh god, I can really imagine how those two things coming together would have resulted in, you know, that's quite a strong feeling, if you know what I mean.
No, well, absolutely. And there's something I've said on here, like, I never understood how, you know, people, especially anyone of my generation, wasn't a Labour supporter. Like, you know, they were the bad. I mean, it's the same. It's exactly the same as now. Like, the Tories were like just incompetent, sleaze ridden, old, you know, terrible, bad people. You know, that was just, I mean, that was probably really blinkered and kind of, you know, the basic view. But that's how I felt. And so anyone over the last, you know, all these years, I've been like, really? How could you think that? This, you like the bad guys. But anyway, there we go. But yeah, you're born 93. So you were just kind of what, a bit that sort of wave of bands with Arctic Monkeys and stuff? Was that what sort of your kind of teenagers just about?
It would have been almost embarrassingly exactly that. A lot of my childhood memories relate to the Oasis of around Heathen Chemistry, because obviously I would have just been far too young to have even heard on the radio stuff coming out around Morning Glory. But I can remember, like, you know, being in my parents' car and things like Little by Little being a single. I remember getting like my first little guitar and like instinctively without really knowing what I was doing, getting like a Parker jacket that I had on and being like, oh yeah, that's what goes with that. And so you make all these associations. But yeah, definitely. And by the time I was like 13, 14, the thing that was happening in British guitar music was like the back end of the Libertines, Arctic Monkeys, then maybe some of the more lad rock stuff that was coming through as well, that was maybe a little less interesting. But I still went to watch a lot of those shows when I was 14 and stuff. But all that time, I think it gets, particularly when you speak to sort of younger people now, quite rightly, because they've experienced Oasis through the Supersonic film, which cuts off in 1997. I think you do forget just how much of like an active pop force Oasis were during those years. Like every NME Awards ceremony I'd be reading about or watching on telly, the Gallaghers were still the star guest and things like that. And I only managed to catch them once. I saved up, this sounds like a real, like a stereotypical Northern, like hard luck story, but I saved up my Christmas tips money from a paper round and got a ticket for the second night of Heaton Park. So that meant that I didn't go to the first one, which was the one where everyone got refunded because of Noel Gallagher being quite careless about offering refunds on stage.
Oasis back in Manchester in front of 70,000 fans. All was going well, but then this. The generator failed for a second time. Liam walked off, for once, lost for words. You could sense the crowd were edgy, so organisers said sorry. After half an hour, though, the problem was fixed, and Noel and Liam returned with this message.
This is a free gig from now on. You'll be getting your money back. Anybody who's kept their tickets will get a full refund, so we're going to start from where we are now. Thank you very, very much. This is a free gig. Let's have it.
And that promise means £3 million being handed back to fans. In this interview before the concert, Noel said money didn't matter.
I don't really lose or make any money, do you know what I mean? I earn what I earn, and I put the kids through school and make sure everybody has got a posh doctor. And other than that, I couldn't tell you how much money I've got, do you know what I mean? I'm not really money-orientated.
It wasn't that, unfortunately, but... Yeah, so I went to that, and then almost as soon as I was, the next thing on from that is by the time I turned 17 and had started working my first job, I remember it, the induction like process you do for that job, that was the week Oasis split up, and I remember my manager who was inducting us sort of making a joke about that, and in my infinite wisdom thinking, well, it's Oasis, this has happened before, they'll be back together by Christmas, and yeah, still waiting for that.
Well, that's how we connected, wasn't it? Because you've been putting an article together about the Oasis split. How, was that something that you kind of wanted to sort of flag and try and get commissioned, or was that something that sort of someone reached out to you for?
Yeah, that came, I'm going to be careful what I say about it, because it's still not finished and I still need to hand it in. I'm not going over deadline or anything like that, but I still don't massively know what shape the article will be. But GQ wanted to do something looking both at the Oasis split and what perceptions might be now about Oasis potentially reforming. And yeah, so speaking to various people and trying to speak to people who maybe aren't always the ones who get asked in the media. One person we're speaking to is Andy Burnham, but I've not had that conversation yet. That'll be later in the week. But he's always really, if we're talking about intersection between music and politics, he's often got extremely bright things to say. I think it's so much so, actually, he's possibly the only Labour politician that Noel Gallagher quite likes these days.
Yeah, Noel loves Andy Burnham. He always goes on about him, and obviously it annoys him because he's a Scouser. But but yeah, that is that's cool.
I think it may reveal something interesting about Andy Burnham there. I just think Burnham as a politician does have this appeal to hit parts of the country that maybe other Labour leaders don't. And I think someone like Noel Gallagher being really persuaded by Andy Burnham, I do think there's quite interesting lessons to be taken from that, maybe.
Absolutely. It'll be interesting. It would be interesting if he came back into frontline politics, what that would mean, whether he would, you know, in a leadership contest, how he'd do, because obviously he didn't do particularly well before. But yeah, I think he's had one of those, it's like he's gone away, he's kind of done his thing up north, become the king of the north, and now he can come down and challenge for the big job, maybe. But
yeah, definitely. I think in America they're really good at having their politics. Like, it's not good for many things, but it allows for people going away, doing something at a regional level, and then coming back stronger. Whereas there isn't much of a precedent for that in Britain. Maybe we can look at Boris Johnson being London mayor, but London's really different. But yeah, no doubt. I think Burnham's a really interesting politician, and he was pictured with Noel Gallagher, wasn't he, just the other week at the Withenshaw gig.
Dedicate this next one to Andy Burnham. Thought we were doing a different song. I wasn't meant to dedicate that song to Andy Burnham, because the lyrical content could suggest that I think he's a lazy cunt. Which is not true. I thought we were doing this song that I'm going to do now, which is called The Master Plan.
Anyway, well, look, oh, that's cool. Well, it's cool that you're getting to kind of getting to do these articles and getting to kind of, it's similar with George Eaton at the New Statesman. Mm. It's like, okay, his job is politics, but then it's like any chance he can get to like sneak in an Oasis article, he will.
Yeah, that's definitely how it feels. Yeah,
I love it. I love that. You know, and that's sort of even like, you know, the YouTuber Patrick Williams, who I had on, you know, he's like makes, you know, film YouTube, but he loves Oasis. So he'll just like, And the use of the camera work is very much like the use of the guitars in Be Here Now. Wow, that's a bit of a reach, but yeah, I love it. I love it when people drop stuff like that in. Cool, but one of the things we really wanted to talk about, because another one of your articles, and obviously it ties in with Manchester and music and culture, was about Half the World Away. And I read that and I thought it was a really, really great piece. That show was a really important show for me. Obviously, I'm not from up north, but it was like the first time you're like, this is just a show about people sitting about and watching TV. This is amazing, you know. And I'd known, you know, obviously like Ricky Tomlinson watching Brookside, and then and Caroline Ahern just being, you know, the one of the funniest people in the country from The Far Show and from Mrs. Merton and stuff. So yeah, so that was, it was such a brilliant show. It was such a great show. So yeah, was that a big one for you growing up, and sort of why you then have sort of, you know, wanted to do this piece?
Yeah, enormously. I think there's some pieces of art that when you get it, you know, you come into contact with them as a child, and then you come back into the contact with them when you're older, and you get a kind of, like, you know, for want of a better word, you do get a bit of a buzz off it, because you're like, oh, like, you know, this Proustian rush, if I remember being into this as a child, and it really worked out. But sometimes you get even luckier, and the piece of art just keeps on revealing more to itself, more to you than it did at the time. And so I would have watched it with my parents when I was like 9 years old, and it would yeah, even, I think the show was just about ended on BBC, but like these things always are, it was constantly being repeated on Gold. And if you're growing up in like Langogue, just outside of Blackburn, there's a lot of time for watching UK Gold, because there isn't really much else to do culturally in the area. So so I would have watched that. And then I just found that when I got into my later teens, or in my mid-20s, or again in the last couple of years, each time I would re-watch the Royal Family, I would think, God, there is just these huge depths that I hadn't realised the first time around, what it says about class or what it says about Britain at that time. And one thing that you do find yourself doing as a journalist, and this is maybe my advice to anyone who is like an aspiring journalist, is you just have to really, for better or for worse, have your mind really tuned to anniversaries, which I'm guessing is pretty similar with this podcast as well. You've got to be really aware of, okay, 2 years' time, it's going to be 25 years since this. In a month's time, it's going to be 20 years since that. So you can get something commissioned around the back of that. And I'd known that this anniversary had been coming up for a while, and I've been making notes about the royal family. And just the more notes I made, the more I was aware that it was probably going to be a really, really long piece, which is what, which it ended up being. So I'm very glad that you read the whole thing as well. I really appreciate that. And I mean, you mentioned about Caroline Ahern then. I think because obviously she really tragically passed away in 2016. And there was a little bit of, there was obviously, you know, obituaries and tributes after that, but I feel that her life hasn't really been explored very much since then. There's no documentary, there's no big TV retrospective, there's not a published biography. There's just kind of been nothing. And I felt that it was possibly a good time to revisit that. I think there's been a lot, I think in the last couple of years, and these are quite odd examples to go for, but I think there are parallels. If you look at what's happened around Britney Spears with the Free Britney thing and kind of a wider understanding of what the pressures are like of women who are celebrities who might be going through mental health challenges in the public eye. Similarly, like the documentary on Amy Winehouse, I think like in the last 10 years collectively, we've maybe taken a little bit of a leap in our understanding of how those issues of alcohol, fame, celebrity, and for sort of big women celebrities, how those might intersect. And I thought that there must be something there with Caroline Ahern. And the more I started to look at it, the more there was, because I mean, you remember this all happening at the time, but it was really difficult for her going through all of that in the glare of the public. And that's why, you know, she did retire from public life quite conclusively in 2001.
Yeah, it is really fascinating, and I agree. It's sort of, you know, that's one of the most startling points about that Amy Winehouse documentary, was when you see how we all had a good old laugh at her, and then you know, there's this, I think it's Graham Norton that's really laying into her, and everyone's laughing, and then it's like, Jesus, we're really laughing at this person falling to bits. And it was the same with Caroline Ahern. I mean, you'd flagged up a few, obviously it's a well-researched piece, and you'd flagged up, like, was it speeches or articles and things that Jonathan Ross at the Comedy Awards, was it? Like,
yeah, Jonathan Ross at the British Comedy Awards, make because she'd been there that night. I can't remember what the exact joke is, and it isn't really one I'd want to repeat. The same thing as well about the like Badil and Skinner, because I mean, the 1990s, for all the good that was going on culturally, it was also this period of quite unreconstructed laddism. And you watch some of the TV shows, and from like a 2023 perspective, you just absolutely cringe. So you've got Caroline Ahern going on speaking to Badil and Skinner, and they're not taking her seriously. They're making sexualized comments about her. It's this really rowdy, laddie atmosphere. You can see that she's a bit uncomfortable, and her behavior maybe feels a little bit erratic when you watch that, and you think, well, that is someone going through quite a lot who is just being put in this uncomfortable position. Chris Evans, as soon as she comes on TFI Friday, and this is someone who's making one of the most watched at the peak of her powers, making one of the most watched shows in Britain, and he talks about the size of her breasts and starts trying to hold her hand, and you do just think, God, it's a really good thing that hopefully that kind of stuff would not fly anymore.
So, Mrs. Merton, where did she come from? Where does she come from?
It's just me with a wig on. No, it's I started doing it on radio first. I was doing like little radio agony aunt things, and then I was doing little bits for Granada telly, regional telly. It's just from there, really.
Is she you? Because you are quite similar to her now, the way you're talking, you know.
Yes, because I don't look like her, do I?
No, you don't look like her. No, because you have other things now, which you don't have when you're Mrs. Merton. You seem to be able to hide them very well. I never knew Mrs. Merton was in that department. I don't know why I'm saying this, but it's what I noticed. When you... Anyway.
It must have just contributed to quite a miserable situation for her. Same with the tabloid press stuff as well. Like, there's a quote from John Ronson in the article that kind of, a lot of the right-wing press had kind of made this decision that they were, you know, that she was maybe going to die tragically, and it was for them to make it happen. And yeah, there was just that thing that you see, again, bring it back to the Amy Winehouse comparison, where it's reporters outside the door, reporters perhaps speaking to police and finding out more information than they should do. And this isn't someone who ever really asked to be in the public eye. This is someone who just wanted to be a comedy performer. It feels a really inverse level of attention. And I think this is a parallel I try and do in the article. With men, with the Gallagher brothers, it's quite, oh, like, look at them going for it, out on the town, the lads, what are they like? Which is all well and good. But then when it's female celebrities in the public eye, it can be very, you know, concerned. Why are they behaving like this? So that double standard, if you start to compare the Gallaghers and the Aherns, you know, yeah, very different situation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree. And it was a really sad one when she died, because she'd been there, you know, from as a kid, like the Farce show. She was always brilliant on the Farce show. Every sketch she did was brilliant. Yeah. And then Mrs. Merton, you know, that was just peak viewing. You had to watch Mrs. Merton. Who was she going to get on? And obviously the famous one, she eviscerated Bernard Manning and George Best and all these. They were just, it was incredible. She was just so good. So, yeah, that was really, it was really sad when she passed. But yeah, I'd say that is the legacy is there of that brilliant show and all her other work. And the one I say, the link to that, obviously we've got a big Oasis link there. It's we're set in Manchester and they had a Oasis song as the theme tune, but it wasn't going to be the original one. Did you? Yeah, it was apparently they contacted Noel Gallagher to do a song, you know, one of the songs, and he wanted them to do Married with Children, and it turned out they went with Half the World Away.
Yeah, I can. That's certainly the story as Noel tells it. That yeah, he was in the US and was told about it, and you get the sense that, I mean, I'm sure we can all imagine what Noel Gallagher's life was like on a US tour in the mid 90s. I think he was told about it, had about a split second to make a decision, and thought, oh, why haven't they gone for Married with Children? And you can see that. I've tried it in my head. You can like overlay the music of Married with Children. It still would have worked really nicely. It's got all those themes, but I think in the long run, the decision to use that track, which, lest we forget, was just a B-side, you know, that ended up creating a kind of modern standard. Because if you look at, so that had been the B-side in 1994 to whatever, and it had really kind of, I mean, you'll remember, you'll know more than me about at the time, but if you certainly look at Oasis set lists, they played it once or twice until 1998. It was only really the double whammy of within the same couple of months you have the Royal Family uses it as the theme tune, and then the Master Plan comes out in November that year, and that then seems to rocket it into the public consciousness. And then by 2001, it's a standard of Oasis sets. By 2009, it's one of the 20 songs that makes the Stop the Clocks compilation. So it's quite an interesting journey, really, how that could have been a footnote for Oasis, but actually ended up becoming, yeah, a modern standard.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those tracks that, obviously that TV link will always be there. But even without that, I think it would have been one that people go back to, you know, like Talk Tonight and things like that have got that extra.
It's in that vein, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in that vein, and it's just a beautifully constructed song. I think it's, you know, it's been widely sort of said that it was very much inspired by This Guy's in Love with You by Burt Bacharach, and you can hear that in the tempo and pretty much everything about it. It's definitely, I don't think it's not a rip-off exactly, but it's he's gone, I want to write a song like that, and to be fair, he's absolutely nailed it. It's a really beautiful song.
You see this guy, this guy's in love with you. Yes, I'm in love. Who looks at you the way I do? When you smile, I can tell we know each other very well. How can I show you? I'm glad I got to know you, 'cause
I think one of the things as well, because it's really easy to go, oh yeah, it is just this guy's in love with you. And I don't know, the way, as I've got older, the way I've started to think about those kind of things, it's almost more like sampling rather than rip-off, in the sense that he's using the mood and feel of This Guy's in Love with You. But the thing he's trying to say, I think of it like a rapper using a sample and actually communicating a really different story. He's using that, you know, that two chord motif from This Guy's in Love with You. But it's in terms of the actual content of the song, it's a song about being unhappy with your surroundings, being in this kind of working class upbringing, which obviously had, and having a sense that there was a Well, you know, this is just the stuff that I've always taken from the song. It is a kind of song about working class escape a little bit. And so that's kind of the genius of Noel Gallagher at that point, able to take these really classically pop reference points and make something that was, yeah, related to millions and millions about quite a normal suburban environment.
Here I go, still scratching around in the same old home. My body feels young, but my mind is very old. So what do you say? You can't give me the dreams that are mine anyway. Half the world away. Half the world away. Half the world away. I've been lost, I've been found, but I don't feel bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look at lyrics, you know, straight away he says it, I would like to leave this city.
Yes.
This old town don't smell too pretty. And you know, that is a theme that sort of resonates through so much of the early work. And I think that's probably why the early work resonated with people much more than the later one, because, you know, those themes of wanting to get away, wanting to make it, nostalgia, you know, like, do you want to be a spaceman, ticks that box as well. Mm-hmm. Like that sort of nostalgia for your past, but, you know, you're going away, but actually you want to get away, but there's something special about where you come from. And that sort of, you know, that's such a potent emotion, you know, that really is an amazing thing. Whereas once you're a rock star, and that's always, I think, why you have that like difficult second and third album, because what you're going to write about then, you know, well, it's really hard being on tour. I mean, there's nothing more boring than it's really hard being on tour albums. So this is just that perfect kind of, everyone feels that growing up, you know, I want to get away. I want to do something with my life.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is, well, you're completely right what you said there. And I think going back to that opening line, I would like to leave this city. I think one of the really powerful things about Gallagher's writing at that point is, there's this kind of schizophrenic attitude to how he feels about the place where he lives, where, think about two songs written at a similar point, What Does Rock and Roll Star Begin With? I Live My Life in the City, There's No Easy Way Out. It's this kind of glamorization of this dull music, drugs culture that he's living in. But at the same time, the same song written in the same year is saying, you know, this place is a dump. It's I think for a lot of people living in Britain in the 1990s or, you know, Britain now, that duality of life is exciting and the place where I'm from, you know, like we're living like a rock and roll star, but also this is slowly destroying me and I want to get out. That's a really potent mix. And I think no one since Oasis has really been able to capture that quite as well. I think it's a really interesting juxtaposition. And I guess as well, I mean, one thing I did want to touch on in the article as well is that, which I hope came through, a lot of the reason why the use of Half the World Away as the Royal theme tune works so well is they were just from a very similar place. Carolina Hearn was from, Irish immigrant parents who settled in South Manchester, exactly the same as the Gallaghers. So there's this kind of interesting loop of shared experience that, yeah, comes across really nicely in the use of that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's a really special one for me. Let's see what the good people of Twitter said about it, because I obviously, you know, we do these Oasis A to Z polls and we see what the people said. So 5 out of 5 got 76%. Massive. Obviously well-loved song. 4 out of 5 got 18%. 3 got 5%. And 2 out of 5 got 1%. So about 3 people chose 1%, who I don't know what the hell is their problem, or they're shaky and press the wrong button. Trevor Duncanson says, a timeless classic that shows Noel is up there with the best of all time. Yep, I agree. And if you think, like, at the time, Oasis, that was another, I use the word duality, so I'll nick that. That was the other duality about Oasis, is you did have these sort of out-and-out rock indie songs. And then you've got this, you know, it's like, wow. It's like the way that Take Me Away sits on the same CD single as Supersonic. You know, you go, what is this? Yeah. You know, this is just, this isn't like an indie band. So, yeah, Very much.
Yeah, I guess that's maybe helped future-proof them a little bit. I mean, I know that obviously where the high-flying birds are and where Liam Gallagher's project is are at different places, but I think it must have come as a real comfort to Noel in the 1990s to know that he was making this music, he could make this music that could be done at a lower register, and you could do this stuff that was more mellow, but still people really, really responded to it. I think it must be slightly more terrifying knowing that you're in, say, the Libertines in 2003 and thinking, I can't really imagine that I could be doing this in 20 years' time, if you know what I mean.
And when I leave this planet, you know I'd stay, but I just can't stand it. And I can feel the warning signs running around my mind. And if I could leave this spirit, I'd find me a goal and I'll live in it. And I can feel the warning signs running around my mind.
Dan Best said, what did you have for tea, Dave? Which I like. Richard Bowes, here we go. Overplayed and overrated, given what else came in the same era. It's no talk tonight, that's for sure. I live for the day Noel drops it from his live set. Wow. I don't know if you can unlike a tweet, but I'm not happy about that, Richard. I would be happy for him to drop it from his live set. He has played it enough times now. I think I was looking on Setlist FM there. He has apparently played it 377 times live. Noel has. So,
yeah,
I think it's time to drop it.
Yeah. I think it maybe is. I think it speaks to how much that song has become absorbed into being a modern standard. That, yeah, it is by its songwriter almost worn a little too proudly. But something that's a nice thing, though, as well. Very, very regularly, he dedicates that to Carolina Hearn, and he's kind of still made the point of linking those things together. I know he's spoken really sweetly about it. You know, in his head, he still thinks of it as the royal family theme tune more than the song that he's wrote, which is a really nice thing to say. It's I can understand the Caroline link, the Hearn link must mean quite a lot to him. I know that when Noel does his little speech that he likes to do quite often about kind of, which I sometimes agree with, about his generation in the 90s being strivers, people coming, I try to think of the other people who he compares himself to, but he goes on about kind of all these different working class people in film or fashion and TV who were coming out of working class backgrounds and didn't want to protest, but just wanted to actually, you know, get stuck into the London media. And he always compares himself to Carolina Hearn there. And I think that's really correct.
Yeah.
Okay, the following song to a friend of mine who died this afternoon. Her name's Caroline. She's a very, very funny woman. She used this next song in a very, 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 very brilliant sitcom in England called The Royal Family. Yeah! So wherever you are.
One thing actually about the Royal Family, I've seen it noted before, but I've never actually heard it confirmed. So I don't know if you know this. Craig Cash, Boned's cousin. Do you know if that's true or false?
Let me research that and get back to you. To me, that has the feel of an urban myth because they do have a slight similarity about them. And physically, I can understand why someone might say that, but that would have come up. I don't know. Where did you hear that rumor?
It's just one of those things I've heard over the years. And I think if you Google it, there's a few people have said, oh, yeah, he's Boned's cousin. But I've never heard Boned say it in an interview. I've never heard...
Craig Cash say it. No, given that there are interviews where he's spoken about half the world away and stuff, and you would think perhaps he would have said, oh, and by the way, that's my cousin's band. I don't know. If my cousin was in Oasis, I'd certainly mention it somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah. But he doesn't do many interviews, does he, Craig Cash? So
no, he doesn't at all. Even the Guardian thing last week about for the 25 years of the Royal Family, he didn't speak about that. And if anything, he's become more private since Hearn passed. So yeah, I think maybe Bonehead would be the one to check that with.
Oh, well, I'll give him a quick call now. No, unfortunately, Boner doesn't speak to me for some reason. I don't know why. Yeah. So and another, like, one of the interesting points about the recording of the song is this, this recording session they had in America was apparently really, really fractious. I know in the master plan notes, when it talks about It's Good to Be Free, which they recorded in the same session, and it's got that like jig at the end, which Bonehead plays on an accordion. And I think it says something like, you know, the joyous kind of sound of that jig would make it seem like they were having a good time, but they did not. This was a horrible, fractious session. And apparently, you know, Noel and Tony were going at it nonstop, and that, you know, Noel kind of ended up playing the drums himself on Half the World Away is apparently the case.
Yeah, I can. Because it's still slightly disputed about the credits on that track, isn't it? Which I can understand, maybe going from McCarroll's point of view, he might want to save an elder face on that. Yeah, I mean, I think it's surprising even just as a piece of music, this thing that sounds so typically not just English, but Northwest English. I can't really, I find it hard to picture it being recorded in Texas.
Yeah, no, it is funny, isn't it? That, but yeah, that was where it was recorded. And yeah, obviously it went on to be, you know, the B-side to Whatever, on the Master Plan, on Stop the Clocks. Yeah, the most famous cover version, I suppose, is the Aurora, which was a John Lewis advert one, which, yeah, was got into the charts in 2015. Oh, no, sorry. So it re-released into the charts in 2015 after that. But yeah, that was a big hit from the John Lewis Christmas advert. Which just shows, you know, the quality of the song, that, you know, it works in kind of all these different ways.
And when I leave this island, I book myself into a soul asylum. I can feel the warning signs running around my mind. So here I go, I'm still scratching around in the same old hole. My body feels young, but my mind is very old. So what do you say? You can't give me the dreams that are mine anyway. You're half the world away. You're half the world away.
Yeah, that seems to have given the song a bit of a life amongst sort of like people who maybe wouldn't ordinarily listen to an Oasis track. I do think, because would that be one of the only high-profile covers of an Oasis track? You'll be able to know more than me. Is that one of the only high-profile covers of an Oasis track that there's been in the last 10 years or so?
There's never been that many. I mean, there's been a few things that people have done for like the Live Lounge and things like that, but no, not really. You know, I think it is so difficult to cover Oasis. Even when people do it, like, you know, the Killers have done it, and like Weezer have done it and things like that, but it never works. I've never, you know, like some certain bands, it's just really hard to cover. And Oasis, I think, are one of them, because what they do is so, although people say it's very generic, it is very unique. So,
it shows up the kind of failure of when people, come out with that generic thing, because I think you're probably the same as me. I've been in so many pubs and clubs where I've heard people doing this thing that if it was so easy to sound like Oasis, you'd think more people would be able to do it. It's, there's whatever is in the sort of special sauce of what makes Oasis different. Can't really be underestimated.
Not doing anybody's tea tonight. We're having chippy. Get a pen and paper, Anthony. You'll have to write this down. Chip.
Ooh, I'll have noodle. I'll have fish chips and mushy peas.
Just want to make sure if people do want to read the article about the royal family, you can find it on the publication Tribune. So if you just Google Tribune, the royal family, you'll find it. Maybe make a brew, because it's quite long. But yeah, it's been a pleasure being on the podcast. It's been a really, really interesting chat. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem, Folan. Where can the, so we can, I'll obviously link that below as well, but you're on Twitter or X as it is now. Is that the best place if people want to follow your stuff?
Yes, you can find me on there. Fergal, that's F-E-R-G-A-L. _41 on Twitter or X or whatever it'll be called by the time this goes up.
Brilliant. Fergal, thanks so much for your time, mate. Really appreciate it.
All right, pleasure. Nice one, pal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much to Fergal. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Really, really good to catch up with him. And yeah, make sure you're following him on Twitter and check out those articles. As I said, they are linked below. All right, we have had another review in. This is from David Holgado reviewing Liam at Nebworth. And it's a little bit different.
Road trip, blasting tunes, meeting mates, the sun is shining, beers, sun hats for days, no beers left at co-op, no stress, in the arena, whoa, it's big, beers, fat white family, haircuts, bumping into old mates, sunnies, Michael Wonder, all the beautiful people, Parker Central, Kasabian rocking, lights down, main event, hello, shatter like a wall of glass, back in the city. Everything and everyone is electric. Roll it over my soul. Beer sold out, wine time. More power to Bonehead. Here comes the classics. Some might say, bangers, on shoulders, massive sing-alongs. I'm going to live forever. Get in, Squire. Where were you when we were getting high? Laughter, music, life, mates, LG, the best times, epic, biblical, Nebworth, come on, you know.
Thank you, Dave. Really appreciate that. It's nice to have something a little bit more different and creative. So well done for pinging that over. All right, that'll do it for today. One more thing just to remind you of. I mentioned, I think, a couple of episodes ago that in my real life, I've never talked about it too much. I'm a financial advisor. That's what I do. I deal with investments and pensions, even mortgages. We can get involved in that. So, yeah, if you want advice or help on anything relating to financial matters, particularly investments, pensions, inheritance tax planning, if you're dealing with selling a property or anything like that, you need some help and advice, then feel free to get in touch. Oasispod@gmail.com is probably the best way. And then, yeah, we can take it from there. All right, that will do it for today. Thank you very much for listening. Stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.